From Capital Analytics, I'm Abby Malone, and this is Invest Insights. Every week, we bring you perspectives, business advice, and more from the leading executives, entrepreneurs, and investors who are building, diversifying, and leading the way in the country's fastest growing metro markets. Real leaders, real insights, right now. These are challenging times. The COVID-19 pandemic has tested our institutions, our businesses, and ourselves in ways many of us could have not predicted. When we started this podcast, we focused on crisis management as the pandemic raged. Season 2 was all about resilience in the face of uncertainty. And our new season will look at what has emerged as the dominating theme of the pandemic, transformation. From products and services and consumer relations to future plans and how these leaders themselves have personally transformed. We'll be going in depth to learn just how much our world has changed. Enjoy. I'm joined today by Andrik Fraser, the president and CEO of Integral Energy. Andrik, welcome.
Abby, pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me.
During our interview with you for our Invest Tampa Bay report, you spoke on the reality of a world without fossil fuels. Can you dispel some of the concerns behind the notion that getting rid of fossil fuels will destroy jobs?
No, I don't want to seem archaic, but I'm pretty sure when the car was invented, people were all concerned about who was going to be making these buggies and kind of tended to the horses, right? You know, in reality, renewable energy is going to create new types of jobs for people. And there's going to be a transition that is not going to happen overnight, which is the other piece. So there's training needs to be put in place. I think there'll be a lot more emphasis put on the high tech aspect that some of these jobs are going to create, especially on the technology and IT side, because people want to have things in their hands in order to be control their power sources. You know, the other piece is, you know, we start talking about biofuel and biogas. A lot of that is made from not so pleasant things like human waste, solid waste, animal waste. So all types of harvesting and jobs can be created from this. So it's not a job killer. It's actually a job creator. And it's a transition that we, you know, have done, you know, time after time again in America.
What are the things that we need to anticipate for that transition? What does the transition look like? How are jobs changing as we move away from the dependency on fossil fuels?
Well, I think from an infrastructure standpoint, that's going to be the biggest piece. I think if you had a chance to kind of listen to, you know, my piece that I did a couple of weeks ago, you know, fossil fuels allow us the ability to ramp up and down on power, right? So a power plant can have a load at 12 o'clock that's different from a load at 2 or 3, and it's really a flip of a switch to make that happen. As you start to rely more on some of our fossil fuels, it will not be that smooth of a transition. I talk a little bit about microgrids, the importance of microgrids. I mean, imagine having smaller versions of power plants, not what we see now on a massive scale, that are more intimate to your home and your community, kind of similar to what you see in places like Winthrop Plaza, where you can work, shop, live, and play in the same environment. That's the type of environment we need to create infrastructure-wise for energy. Smart homes and smart technology, whether that includes solar, you know, that's on your home, the ability to be able to, you know, move power not only from your home to the grid, maybe to a neighbor who needs a little more than you do. But that's going to take a lot of legislation as well as some ingenuity. And that's why I think from a job creation standpoint, this would be great for the economy.
Tampa Bay is advancing quickly as it relates to creating a sound innovation ecosystem within the university system, working closely with municipalities and the private sector to produce STEM talent and recruiting related companies into this market. As a Hillsborough County resident, how would you characterize the transformation of the Tampa Bay region, and how will this benefit Integral Energy moving forward?
Well, you know, in order to have talent, they have to be trained, right? So the fact that we have the University of South Florida, Hillsborough Community College, University of Tampa, you know, all of our sister counties in Pinellas and Pasco, you know, the ability to train, you know, college-ready students is imperative. But to be honest, I think a majority of our leap forward is going to be on the trade and technical side. We're starting to see a trend of more students not wanting to go the college route. Students that are getting certifications and training by the time they exit high school that have the ability to impact the job market immediately. So we're going to have to rely, I think, heavily on, honestly, on our school systems, our K-12 school systems,
right,
to start to modify how they train and teach our students. Our generation was told, if you don't go to college, you're not doing the right thing. I don't think that works for everyone right now. So you're going to see a lot more emphasis, I think, put on trade and technology and certifications that will allow people that are 18, 19, 20 years old to immediately have an impact on the workforce.
What is the responsibility of the business community or the energy sector to help
promote that dialogue and start to get kids interested in vocational training or add certain curriculum to high schools and other systems of education to get the jobs that we eventually need.
So part of that is presence, right? Working with people like the Tampa Bay EDC, for example, Tampa Bay Partnership, letting them know what jobs are on the horizon. So, we can start training our fifth, sixth, and seventh graders now for jobs that are going to come 8 years from today. But honestly, a lot of this is going to have to do some work in Tallahassee. A lot of this is legislative. You know, our school systems are on a great system that is established in Tallahassee. That's how they receive their funding. So there's going to need to be a conversation with our legislators on making the shift, or maybe having schools that are, you know, strictly set for technology-based type activities, which we saw kind of heavily in the late 70s and early 80s, but with a more emphasis on kind of not hands-on crafts like welding and automotive, things of that nature, but more on high technical and computer type jobs.
Considering all that we're going through with the pandemic and school having to be held remote and a more emphasis on technology and really propelling technology in the future, do you think that now is a time that we can capitalize to have those conversations with Tallahassee to offer these types of programs, maybe with mindsets more open?
Well, I can tell you this, if my 16-year-old was here today, I would have gotten the lighting and everything set up a lot quicker for this interview. I do think the time is now, but I also think the attention is not on that as we speak, right? I hate to say that, you know, dealing with this pandemic right now, I think all of our resources need to be on getting people vaccinated, making sure we have protocols in place, you know, to make sure that we're able to move forward to get back to some sense of normalcy. Once that's done, I think there needs to be a healthy conversation on what education looks like, what's the role of brick and mortar, what's the role on e-learning, and this is also going to be a transition to what we see in the workplace. I'm pretty sure if this happened a year ago today with no COVID vaccine, I'll be sitting in the studio with you somewhere in a full production as opposed to us doing this remotely, right? So the ability to be able to plan, pivot, and shift is going to be paramount in us moving forward and making sure that we don't get left behind. So it'll be interesting to see kind of after this legislative session and we kind of get everything with COVID kind of nailed down, what steps are taken to move us into the future.
2020 showcased the importance and work that still has to evolve and be done in regards to diversity, equity, and inclusion in both the civic as well as the business world. You recently wrote a piece for the Business Journals about Black leaders missing from the table. What rethinking and transformations of policies, practices, and procedures have to occur within the business community to create equitable change?
So, I mean, there are things, of course, you can do from a policy and procedure standpoint. And private industry, I think, is a lot quicker and more able to do that than the public sector, just because of the way rules are written. But in all honesty, Abby, it's going to be up to us and the kids that we're raising. I mean, I did an exercise this summer, some of my friends in the chamber, and I can't quite remember the specifics of the exercise, but basically you wrote down like initials of five people, right? And you went through like somebody you trust, somebody you like the most, and basically it paints a picture of the people you're comfortable being around. And then it said, okay, well, once you do this, I want you to write down the race, ethnicity, their religious background, and their sexual preference on the sheet of paper. And how common are these people to you? And of course, you would not be amazed that for most people, 90% of the people they put on that sheet of paper have the same religious beliefs, race, sex, so on and so forth. So we have to do a better job of embracing other races and cultures and individuals. People tend to hire people that they like, whether that's people that work for them or people that they're giving business to. And it just has to be almost like a thoughtless act. That's not going to happen overnight. We didn't get hit where we are today overnight. So policies and procedures will help, but it really does have to start at home with like anything else that you do as far as learning and teaching.
Obviously, last year was a transformative one. And while we talked about how business is changing, education is changing, socially we're changing, how have you personally transformed this past year?
2020 was rough, I think, for a lot of people. The one thing it did allow me to do was sit still for long periods of time and really be able to take in what was going on around me, especially as it relates to my home life and, you know, the kids, my family and my wife, and really putting a re-emphasis on doing what's important for them is number one. Number two is kind of taking care of myself. Sometimes when you put into a leadership, you know, I chose to start my own business, right? Which is great. And I know that there are certain responsibilities that come along with that. But when you start to get involved civically, join different boards, those can become very time consuming. So then you have this whole work-life balance thing you're trying to put into play. So, you know, for me, 2020 has been about A, making sure I'm able to take care of myself first, especially from a mental standpoint, and I have a balance. B, making sure my family has what they need from a environment standpoint, just creating an environment of open dialogue and love and caring and sharing. And then the other piece is trying to spread that out, you know, in my work and in the community.
You've been listening to Invest Insights. Be sure to follow, rate, and review this podcast to hear more. I'm Abby Malone. Thank you for tuning in.